before graduation, a group of students in my high school choir, we went and auditioned for a part in Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger, the big, I don't know if it was a super hit, but it's the one where he does the put the cookie down now. It's that one.
From the jshulman.com studio, this is the Building a Life and Career in Security podcast. Now, your host, Jay Shulman.
Hey, it's Jay, and welcome to Season 2 of the Building a Life and Career in Security podcast, the podcast where you get to hear other information security professionals' career journey. If you'd like to keep up to date on the podcast, text SECURITY to 33444 to be added to the podcast mailing list. This week on the podcast, we have Brian Johnson. Brian spent most of his career as an IT guy, infrastructure, networks, and the occasional security work. Now he is completely focused on security and just landed his dream job. Here's Brian's journey.
So I first got kind of hooked on computers. This was way back in 1996. I had saved up enough money to go halvesies with my parents on, and I'm not trying to brag here, but it was a smoking fast Pentium 1 75 megahertz with 4 meg of RAM and a 500 meg hard drive. So it was pretty sweet. I think I was able to convince my parents at that time that this thing was going to help me be an honor roll student. But if I'm just being completely honest with your listeners, I just wanted something to play Doom 2 on. And that really was, gaming was kind of the thing that got me into computers. And I didn't really realize it at the time, but wrestling through installing things and tweaking system settings, I was learning a lot about troubleshooting and kind of being a help desk person, because this was the pre Google days. So if I had some sort of software that wouldn't install right, or a weird pop-up, or an unexpected restart, or whatever, all I had as resources was me and some of my high school buddies that knew a little bit about computers. We would get together and just try to hammer it out the best we could through trial and error, but mostly error. But our only other option would be to take it to some sort of authorized, you know, repair shop, which was way out of a high schooler's budget. So anyway, as I was nearing graduation from high school that year, I thought, you know, I've got a pretty good base of technical skills to get started with, and this might be the direction that I take my career. But then just a few months before graduation, a group of students in my high school choir, we went and auditioned for a part in Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger, the big, I don't know if it was a super hit, but it's the one where he does the put the cookie down now. It's that one, if you've seen the movie. And there's a part where some Christmas carolers are kind of singing door to door, and they end up in front of Phil Hartman's character's house, and Arnold is in there. He's broken in. He's going to steal a toy. He starts a statue on fire, and he kicks it out the front window at us. That's kind of our big moment. And it was the best job I've ever had. We got to spend a day in a recording studio and then a bunch of days on set, you know, hanging out with Arnold and Phil Hartman and Sinbad and Rita Wilson. And I can see why people get addicted to that lifestyle, because there's unlimited food for free. There's assistants, you know, waiting on you hand and foot, and, you know, oh, do you need a little makeup touch up? And are your hands cold? Do you need gloves? And ooh, the sun's shining in your eyes. We should get you some shades. And to top it all off, we got paid what was Monopoly money for high schoolers. And what's kind of funny is that my wife, we were dating at the time, she's my now wife, she was also in the movie. And so twice a year we get a little royalty check from Fox, and, you know, we'll combine those and have a dinner at Applebee's. It's not exactly the size check that it used to be, but we still, you know, like to treat ourselves a little bit. So anyway, I actually went off to college thinking I'm going to be a theater major. I'm going to pursue this, and you'll see me, you know, in leading roles in no time. But at the end of that first year, I grew quite a bit, and I had this epiphany that, you know, there are people way more talented at me than this, and I don't think I've got that that drive and that thick skin to really succeed in this business. So I'll go to my backup plan, which I didn't really have, but I was just trying to think what else can I do? And I had been decent at writing for most of my life, at least I thought. So I switched gears and focused on mass communications and public relations and ended up getting my degree in that. But just shortly, right out of college, in my first job, I was sitting in the marketing department of this large food service company, and I was writing press releases and food articles and coordinating public relations events, which was really fun. But our little team of maybe five or six of us, we all used Macs, and the IT department, the in-house IT department, for whatever reason, they wouldn't support them. I mean, they, short of coming by and saying, okay, let's reboot this thing, oh, it's still an issue, they would call in the Geek Squad. And this was Geek Squad before they were absorbed by the big Best Buy mothership. They were just kind of this independent company out of downtown Minneapolis. But anyway, those guys would show up with their white shirts and the clip-on tie and their whole thing. And I would just, shoulder surf with them a little bit and go, yeah, you know, I could do that. I was doing this kind of stuff when I was, you know, troubleshooting my Doom 2 install and trying to make drivers work and figure out why my computer is making funny noises. And that really inspired me to kind of ditch the PR track, much to my parents' dismay, sort of abandoned much of the money and time they had spent sending me for a mass comm degree, and I plopped into my first help desk or hell desk position, and it came with all the benefits that I'm sure some of your listeners are familiar with. You know, it was carrying a pager, it was dealing with lots of angry customers, it was, you know, troubleshooting impossibly complex problems over the phone, because this was really before WebEx and a lot of those type of technologies were actively available. And I felt like I really had a knack for it. And I was then sort of on the trajectory of climbing the ladder, so to speak, to move into a whole variety of different sysadmin and network admin roles, and was, I felt, beefing up a pretty good base of skills and certifications in a really wide variety of technologies. So with every new job, I would kind of get to get my hands dirty in something different. So it would be desktops and servers in one role, and then maybe I'd broaden out and get experience with more operating systems. So I got to touch a little bit of everything, Windows, Linux, Mac, and got fairly decent on the hardware side too. So I was, you know, working for some companies that really would support anything on electricity. So it was everything, including routers, firewalls, storage, virtualization. And I was really loving that. But I got to a point that I know many of my friends have gotten to as well, where you feel like you're almost so general, you're at a point where the choices offered include you for kind of next steps in the career would include either you deep dive and you really specialize and become, you know, a firewall person or a virtualization guru or storage or what have you, or get into management. Those were also opportunities out there, and I wasn't really too pumped about either one. So I was kind of at a crossroads. And then right about 2013, I guess mid 2013, I had coffee with an old friend of mine who was starting, had just started for the last couple of years in information security business. And he had a position open that he said I should come and apply for. And I didn't understand what his company was about at the time. I'm sure I asked some really dumb questions like, so when you say information security, do you take people's information and then just, you know, buy a better firewall or like make a big room with some awesome locks and then just make sure people can't get it? And, you know, I think he just kind of shook his head and, you know, he said, you've got the IT background. I can groom you and make you understand this and get you the skills you need to succeed. So he was a great mentor for me. And so for that next almost 3 years, I feel like I really became a generalist of a different sort, this time in the information security arena. So he had me doing a little bit of everything in that space, from writing policies, doing vulnerability scans, launching phishing campaigns, helping with compliance-based needs like PCI and HIPAA assessments. And then I also got my first taste of pen testing, web app and network pen testing. And the company decided to really try to make pen testing one of their more core offerings. So I jumped at the chance to kind of be their guy, and they got me signed up for the OSCP, the Offensive Security Certified Professional, which, just as a quick side tangent, I really can't plug that enough, because I feel like it is the best training. If you really want to get your hands dirty in hacking and want to know how it's done and have skills that you can walk away from and be able to actually use in the real world, it's an incredibly challenging, incredibly maddening, but ultimately satisfying training and certification that concludes with a 24-hour test where you've got to hack into X number of machines and capture a flag on each one. And it really is the only exam I've ever taken where I really missed it when it was over. I missed the test and I missed the training. So anyway, that was a great, brutal, almost killed me experience. I thank God for my understanding wife and kids, because it was a lot of red eye nights and overdosing on caffeine to make it through. But I came out of that going, this is what I want to do. I really want to do just this area. I'm not as jazzed up about the policies and the information security programs. I want to help, you know, still kind of feed my love of the technical side of IT, but funnel it through a security lens, if you will. So I just started kind of exploring, you know, networking a little bit on LinkedIn and social media, and just try to do some research and figure out, you know, what is this position that I want? Is it available? Are there people that just do pen testing and nothing else? And most of the feedback I got at that time was, there's lots of positions and opportunities open, but a lot of them came with a pretty heavy travel requirement. And I was already kind of traveling enough in my current position. I ideally wanted to work from home, but you know, the folks I would talk to would say, no, you know, it's at least 50% travel. So I just thought, I'll just wait it out and kind of hone my skills for the time being. And then the one other thing I did to kind of passively work on my job search is I started responding to all those wonderful LinkedIn emails that I'm sure we all get. Those are the ones that, you know, start with, you know, "Hi, Brian, we saw your resume and boy, oh boy, are we impressed. We read it word for word and we think you'd be a great entry-level Java developer. It's only, you know, 6 hours away from your house. It's got competitive salary. And did I mention it's, you know, on the weekends on a night shift. When can we give you a call to discuss this exciting opportunity?" So what I wrote up is just a boilerplate. Just had it right there in my desktop. And it was just saying like, "Hi, this is who I am. This is kind of a 3-sentence summary of what I can do and what I'm all about. And here's what I want in a job." And I made about a 5-bullet list, and it was very lofty. I mean, it was dream job material. So I said, I want to be making X salary. I want to work from home. I want it only to be pen test focused. And I want 0% travel. Thanks, sincerely, Brian. And I was just on autopilot. I'd open up LinkedIn. I'd have a couple of those. I didn't even read what they say. Just reply, plop in my boilerplate, send. And I must have done that to 100 messages or so. And this is like last October, November. And then midway through November, I got this call from somebody at one of the big recruiting firms. And she said, "Hi, I'm, you know, whoever with this firm. And I'm calling you back about your email." And I, you know, this was like middle of the workday. I'm working on something else. And I said, "You'll have to forgive me. I don't know who you are. And I don't know that we've ever emailed." And she said, "No, you wrote me an email about kind of your hit list of what you're looking for in a job. And I think I've got something for you. Do you want to, do you want to have an interview?" And it was like, "Yes, yeah, I absolutely would like to do that." And so, So she got me an interview with this large organization on their ethical hacking team. And I walked away from that interview going, I don't know that I nailed the interview, but this is everything I want in a job. And I really pray it works out and that I get to go to the next step. But surprisingly, when they called back in a couple weeks, there was no next step. They just said, we'd like to offer you the position and can you start in a couple weeks? And so it was, I've never had such an easy job transition. I mean, I've had several and they've all come with, you know, a lot of wrestling and you make your pros and cons list and you talk with the family and you this and that. I mean, this really was the definition of a slam dunk, absolute no brainer. And I've been with them since December and doing just what I really, really love, which is, I'd say it's about 80% web app pen testing and 20% more, I guess, traditional network pen testing. But it's, you know, sitting right here where I am now at home in the home office, not having to get up or fight through traffic. And even though our team is spread across three or four continents, we collaborate a ton online and it's a really experienced bunch. So I've got a lot that I can learn from them. I'm kind of humbled at what they can do and what great teachers they are. But it's ended up just being, a fantastic fit, very satisfying from a professional standpoint. And it's made my family life better and kind of rebalanced some of the things that were out of whack. And, I've really just never been happier. I feel very blessed, very thankful to God for the opportunity. And that kind of brings us here to the here and now, Jay. And I'm going to just pause to make sure that, I haven't bored you into a coma. And then I know we have some kind of subtopics related to this, that we wanted to chat about as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, if I could pick something out that probably you said and didn't really think about it, but was really, in my mind, instrumental in making your job selection work was the fact that you really weren't paying attention to the opportunities that were coming in. It was, hey, you probably sent a very nice, polite email. I know a lot of people don't send them polite, but you weren't looking at it. And I think sometimes we get drawn into a well-written, this is a really cool opportunity. You're going to get to play with all kinds of different things. But oh, by the way, it's 6 hours away from you. And you start that process, right? You're like, wow, that's really cool. And I think that because you didn't ever look at the opportunities, you really were waiting around, which is very noble of you, waiting around for the right opportunity to come along. And I think that's why you're so happy today, because you didn't need to compromise. The only opportunity that came to you was the right one.
Yeah, exactly. I think just doing kind of that blind, like reverse spamming on my part, I think that is exactly what you said. It helped not even let other opportunities show up on my radar. But then also, I think it weeded out what is, I don't want to generalize and say, recruiters aren't good people or don't have your best interest in mind. But there's just it's such a cutthroat, they're just throwing everything against the wall, seeing what sticks. I was also able to weed out and find, a good recruiter who was listening to my needs, not just finding a position that they kind of twisted the verbiage to make it look like the dream position for me. And I think that's important too, in any job hunt is to find a good recruiter that is really, really knows you and knows what you want, and that they're not doing the, looking at their little job feed, kind of going, "Oh yeah, I could pitch this to Jay, or I could pitch this to Brian." And once you have that ally on your side, it's so invaluable. Even if you're not actively looking for a job, a good recruiter is a great person to just say, what's the market doing right now? I just got these three certs, and I have X experience, and this is what I've been doing now. Am I getting paid fairly?" And it's great to have that neutral sounding board that can just say, yeah, you're actually good. You're maybe even a little bit on the high side. So that if you're uncomfortable in a job and salary is what's making you uncomfortable, you can kind of rest easy and go, okay, well then this conversation has just made me feel like, I need to stay. Sometimes that's, the recruiters can help you want to stay as much as they can make you want to pursue a new position.
No, that's an excellent point. Yeah, we shouldn't necessarily always think about them for one one being a one trick pony, I guess would be the word. So you have all these bullets, working from home, focused on pen testing. I don't know if there was a bullet in there on the size of the company or company culture or anything like that. But you move from a relatively small company to you know, a Fortune 100, Fortune 50, you know, big company. How was that transition? Was it did you even think about it before you accepted the job?
Not too much. And I had, I was at a company of about 25 or 30 and, you know, moving to this position was probably the biggest adjustment, and not necessarily in a bad way, but I think, what I would share to other people making that same kind of transition from, you know, really, really bitty to really, really small is that, a few things are most definitely going to change. One is I think of like when I was at this smaller company, I was the master of my domain. I had my machine, I had local admin rights. I could install whatever I want. I could use it for personal stuff. Nothing was monitored, really. Nothing was logged. We were very casual about that. And if I needed to be domain admin to install something on our network, I just shouted across the hall to our guy who took care of that and, hey, make me a domain admin and let me get this service up and running. And on the flip side, you move to a much larger company. I spent, I think, my first week just getting my machine up and running, because all the things that my machine needed to be, you know, productive on the network, everything had a policy, a procedure, a ticket, a help desk chat tied to it. And I really have little to no control over this box. So, for example, you know, I fired up, it does all of its, it self updates, you know, Windows updates and application updates. And if I want something like an out of the norm browser, like if I want Chrome on there to do pen testing with Chrome, I have to apply to have that application pushed to my machine. And it goes through, you know, sort of a change control, you know, again, a ticketing, a workflow process. And the first few times it got kicked back. And so I needed to get my boss involved and make justification for, hey, Brian really needs Chrome. Here's why. And, you know, what would normally be a 2-minute operation on my own machine, you know, turned into about a week of back and forth and tickets and all that kind of stuff. So I think, I guess maybe what I'm getting at is that the wheels turn slowly in a big company. Change is slow, and even some of the most basic things need, they need meetings, they need lots of chatter and approval, and there's chains and things tied to each other. So I was kind of biting my nails and going bonkers, because I was so used to this 1,000-mile-an-hour work pace that all of a sudden, you know, my first few weeks are really just letting my machine get all its updates that are pushed and applying for software I need and reading policies. And but I realized that just in a company that size, that's okay, that's expected, that's not bad. You know, you're not frowned upon. It just is what it is. So I kind of look at this work machine across from me as, you know, something I have very little control of. And I just sort of assume, I don't know this, but I'm just assuming it is monitored, logged, and every little thing I do around it is likely captured somewhere. And so, my biggest fear is that I'm browsing some hacking site and I get bit by malware, and all of a sudden my machine is down and I'm here in a home office and I'm out of a machine for 2 days, that, I keep my home Mac right next to it, and I kind of do all my personal and research and stuff on it, just to keep this work machine as clean and pristine as possible. So, So that, yeah, that's one thing, the kind of the master of your domain changing, your role in that changing between a small and big company. And then the other thing that really got me, was a big adjustment, was the whole, work from home thing, which, is an interesting beast, because I think so many people want that, and that's their dream situation, is just, oh, you know, I'll be at home and it'll be so great. But it really does, I think, take the right kind of personality and the development of some good habits succeed because, you know, I mean, really, I roll out of bed, I help get my kids on the bus, and then the house is empty. I can do whatever I want. I have a, you know, I have a boss that's not even in this state. You know, he's got me up on the Jabber chat, but it's up to me to be, you know, focused on work tasks. And it's tempting, to be honest with you, to go, well, I'll just, you know, we're really behind on laundry, so I'm going to get that done. And there's this little home project, you know, I got to hang a gutter. Maybe I'll just do, I'll take time to do that. And I think there's some guilt almost that you and I talked about this a little bit earlier too, Jay. There was guilt I felt about, this seemed like such an ideal situation that, I think for maybe even that first weeks, I was probably putting beyond 40 hours in, just because I just wanted to be like, boss, I want you to like me. I want to be productive. I want to just shine on this team. And so that has since kind of evened out, but I know that one of my coworkers, for example, I met him at one of our branch offices, and I said, wait, you're on my team. Aren't you out of your home office? And he told me that he was, but he asked to be set up with a cube in one of the offices because he was just, it was tempting for him to, you know, just get distracted with other, things. And he wanted that interaction with, people and, you know, seeing other warm bodies and having that water cooler camaraderie and back and forth. And he was succeeding, you know, much better now that he was amongst other coworkers. So I think that's another important point as well. I think you need to know your personality and do a bit of personality searching and soul searching and kind of figure out, you know, am I okay being sort of the lone wolf, and do I have the discipline to just stay focused and put in an honest hour or an honest day's work? Or do I kind of really need that banter and that, you know, everybody around the meeting table and telling about the weekends and that kind of stuff? Because I think I have a personality that's social but antisocial in a way. So like when it comes to work, I just like to be by myself and doing this kind of thing. But other people just feel kind of lonely and estranged if they're not amongst coworkers. So,
well, so I'm glad you brought up the work from home piece. So was it, you know, I know it was a bullet on your request for a job. How did you go about having that discussion during the interview process, or did you have that discussion? How did it come about? Because I know that's a really tough question that people have when they know that it's acceptable, or maybe they don't know it's acceptable. How do you bring it up? When do you bring it up in the interview process? So what did you do?
Yeah. So in this one was actually the easiest. I've been, so for maybe the last 4 or 5 years, I've been just kind of partial work from home, just by the way the jobs I was in. They just sort of offered that flexibility eventually to the staff because we were always traveling from client site to client site. And, you know, if I was way across town and home was between, you know, between there and the office, they would say, well, it doesn't make sense. Just go home, you know, that kind of thing. But, with this position, what was nice is that, that was part of the deal. This team that I'm on, we're all work from home. Nobody is out of any of the central offices. And so it was just kind of baked right into the job description. But they did, you know, ask me a lot of questions, based on what I was just talking about, where they were concerned, you know, had I done this before, you know, did I, quote unquote, have what it takes to be disciplined, to really stay, to stay focused. And I really wasn't worried about it, at all, but, I'm glad they asked those questions. Cause like I said, I've seen people, start with the home office and then just, you know, fail. They don't end up liking it after all, even though it seemed like an ideal setup.
Absolutely. So there's this, you know, really bizarre similarity between you and I that we've talked about, a couple times now that I think is pretty funny. And that, you know, we were both in a movie, so you talked about Jingle All the Way, and I was in A League of Their Own, and if I can find the picture of me in the movie, I will attach that to the show notes for today's episode.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, one of the things that I find really interesting is, you know, whether communication, the ability to communicate in the technology world, really sets up as a differentiator in the field. And, and I think combined, you know, so you have a really interesting scenario where you work from home. You know, my guess is, you know, you're in the choir, you went and spent time in theater and communications. You're probably a pretty good communicator. How has communications overall played into your job? And do you think it differs when you're working from home versus always being in a conference room or face-to-face with people?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think I kind of made light of that, you know, I back in college when I graduated with Mass Comm and then, you know, sort of ditched it for security, that was too, I think I was too poking too much fun at that, because you touch on a really good point that communication is, I would say, super critical. And really, I think that's been a large component of my success, because I'll never say like I'm the best IT guy or Exchange admin or firewall person or InfoSec hacking guy. But I'll say that I think I've got a really good sense, you know, through those jobs and kind of coming up the ranks, you know, dealing with the difficult customers, all those sort of things, I think make communication essential. Because if you're setting expectations and, you know, you're working on an issue for a customer, but you're regularly in communication with them, even if it's something big, like where their email system is totally unavailable or a system is completely down and they're, you know, they're losing money. I think communication is that lifeboat that sort of keeps everything together. And if people are receiving poor communication or feel neglected, that just kind of makes everything explode or implode. And so now, yes, with the not doing face-to-face stuff anymore, and really my job is kind of it's no longer externally facing to outside customers. It's sort of like everybody within the organization and the different departments are our customers. And I think having good communication skills, especially writing, because I see a trend in a lot of these really, really large companies where, everything is an email, and if it needs to be, it'll be a call. But I do a ton of, you know, instant messaging and emailing, and so making sure that you can, you know, write well and communicate your points as effectively and concisely as possible will serve you well. Because you know, I still occasionally get the equivalent of a small novel, you know, of an email saying, "Hey, we're kicking off this project, and here's what you need to do," and you scroll down, and you're like, good Lord, this is three pages. This really needs to be a call. And we, you know, we do a fair amount of that as well. And I would say your verbal skills are just as important, because when you get on a WebEx without cameras — we don't use cameras, it's audio only — you are missing that face-to-face, you know, reading people, understanding their reactions. And some of these calls have 10, 15 people on them. It's really difficult, and you really need to be able to sort of, especially if it's a project you're leading, it can be like herding cats a little bit, but you need to be good at making a game plan, coming in with an agenda, being able to hit the high points and get everybody on the same page quickly. Because, and I know you were talking, Jay, about your calendar too. It's just stacked. Many of these people I'm on these calls with, their workday is calls. It's 10 to 10:30 to 11 to whatever. And you've got about a half hour to do your, you know, to get your time with them and get your project kind of out to see. Otherwise, you know, it's a week out, it's 2 weeks out before you're going to get all those people on the same virtual room again.
Or you leave them with, you don't communicate effectively, and they walk away thinking that something's really bad when it's good, or really good when it's bad, because you had your 30 minutes and you didn't manage your time well, or you didn't communicate well. So yeah, it can really get messed up.
And I'm sorry, you just made me think of one other thing, just to, as far as size of companies and bringing all these people in a virtual room together. That has been the one other piece, I think, of culture shock, but also plays into the communication piece, is when I need something for my team, like let's say I need a Kali Linux VM spun up in some segment of the network. It has taken me a long time to figure out, like, who is the person that can make this happen, because there will be many people involved for that. It's no longer just me on my ESX install at my small consulting gig where I just right-click new VM, mount the ISO, bam, I've got a server 08 box. It's like now in my current situation, I've got to get somebody from the virtualization team, from the Linux team, from the storage team, from the networking team, from the firewall team. And it's been a long process of just figuring out, you know, who my go-to people are, and then trying to strategically schedule it and kind of understand their process so that I can go, okay, first I need the virtualization guy, then we'll do this, do these four things, then we'll involve this person and get things built effectively. So again, I think this is where your communication skills are key, because if you're not comfortable just calling somebody you don't know in a different state and just saying, hi, I'm new and I don't know what I'm doing, but can you help me? And you don't mind getting a little bit, feeling like the freshman first day guy, I think you could kind of get swallowed up a bit by a larger company.
Yeah, and you're being judged on your ability to get that VM spun up in the right segment of the network. And if you if you don't do it in the right place, even though you may be a fantastic pen tester, you're kind of failing at the job. So, well, I appreciate you coming on today. This was a fantastic conversation. I loved talking about the job change. I think that's incredibly important, especially. How you did it. If people want to get in touch with you, where can they find you on the internet?
Probably the best place right now is 7ms.us. That's just kind of a blog, and I have a mini, like a short 7-minute podcast a few times a week that augments that. And I started this a few years ago when I was just getting into the transition from IT to security. And I just thought there's so much to learn here. There's so many resources, there's tools, all the stuff I'm getting introduced to. I want to help other people like me. So I'll talk about a tool or an experience or a customer story or whatever. And, it's just kind of my, playground, I guess, for just trying to help others, as they, get into security or transition, like we're talking about, transition from a small company to a large company. So, I'd love people to check that out and love to hear from you if you have any feedback on anything.
Great. Thanks for that. And thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Jay.
Thanks, Brian. I loved how Brian figured out what he wanted and waited for the right opportunity to come along. I've put pictures of both Jingle All the Way and A League of Their Own in the show notes today. Head over to jshulman.com/Brian-Johnson. And thank you for listening. If you'd like to keep up to date on the podcast, text security to 33444 to be added to the podcast mailing list. Talk to you next week. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Building a Life and Career in Security podcast with Jay Shulman. For more information and to subscribe, go to jshulman.com.